Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. And we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. We encourage you to click on the link to our guests. As I've said many times before, we do not reinvent the wheel. There's no need for me to put up a separate page for every single guest. I'll just send you to their website because that's where all of the information is. So please check it out. And of course, we lay out this smorgasbord. Take what you take what you want, what resonates with you, leave the rest for someone else. And of course, in this digital age, you know, I'm not sure exactly how the metaphor would work anymore. But nonetheless, I encourage you to check out the guests that we have on the program, especially our guest today who I happened to meet through one of this station's programmers, and her name is Athena, and she has a very interesting story to tell. Athena Markopoulos, her pen name is Lily Rose, and she's written a book called Athena, A Modern-Day Goddess Love Story, How One Woman Found True Love and Happiness by Honoring Her Inner Wisdom. And Athena, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you for having me.
This is very interesting. I mean, the brief conversation that we had, we both sort of started out on our what I call my search at the age of 17, sort of official, when I read for the very first time Autobiography of a Yogi. And, of course, I have the print version that probably goes back to when I was 17. I have an audio version that I have on my phone that I listen to fairly regularly. So I've probably read the book 30, 40 times over the last – I'm not even going to try to do the math. But it's been a while. And I'm always intrigued by some of the things that I pick up on. And you've read the same book. That was kind of where you started.
That was my very first metaphysical book given to me by my mother.
Yeah, really?
Because we were having issues.
Uh-oh.
We were having issues. I was going through the puberty thing, and she was trying to give me that higher vibration information for whatever reason. I think the therapist recommended it.
But it
changed me.
Now, when you say higher vibration, you are speaking more along the lines of a metaphysical or spiritual perspective rather than the institutional types of organized religion.
Oh, absolutely.
And then, okay.
I don't follow any religion.
Yeah.
My religion is living life and being in the moment and loving people and myself as much as I can.
I mean, and you've had a rather wide and varied life in terms of your career and the things that you've pursued and the places that you've traveled and so forth. And, I myself, I've been out of the country four times in my life. Two of them were to a place that I want to go a third time to stay, and that's Ireland. But it also has its own wonderful metaphysical and spiritual energies and history and stories and so forth.
I believe Eckhart Tolle had a seminar there.
Did he?
In Ireland because of the energies there.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. There's a wonderful place called Newgrange on the east coast, north of Dublin. It's a prehistoric site and has one of these mounds that you can go into. And it was positioned, like a lot of these ancient sites are, so that on the summer and winter solstice, in this case it was the winter solstice, the sunlight goes straight down into the chamber and illuminates the entire interior.
Right.
Not for very long, but nonetheless.
Right.
And we happen to have the privilege of going inside of it, not at that time. And they don't allow you to take pictures or any kind of recording of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
What I can tell people is the acoustics inside that chamber were as close to perfect as you could get.
It makes you wonder.
Yeah.
Who gave us the guidance? Were we an advanced race back then? Did we have help from possibly aliens from another planet?
Or have we fallen from another?
Splice DNA. Actually, the evidence is now proving.
Well, there's an interesting theory, and as you say, the evidence is starting to prove this, but there's an interesting sort of mental game that I think is real appropriate. You take a look at all the other species on the planet, and every single one of them is suited to their environment. You don't see polar bears at the equator or iguanas at the poles.
No. They've got the fur.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But man is the only one who must clothe and shelter himself in order to survive.
We don't belong here.
Yeah.
Neanderthal man belonged here, and then we all wonder about the missing link.
And
we did not evolve.
Well, I've had some interesting conversations with Greg Braden, for example, and it's interesting how just when they think they found the missing link, for example, there was this mummified little girl that was found somewhere in, I think it was in Europe, if I'm remembering the story correctly, and they ran DNA because they thought that she was connected.
Right.
And it turns out that she didn't have any of the DNA that connected her to either side.
Right. So how did that happen?
Yeah.
The DNA has been genetically modified throughout history. They're now beginning to show that, which is great. And if anybody, have you heard of the show Ancient Aliens?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's just wonderful. Yeah. It's so educational. And now the science can back it. So it's not a outlandish fiction, science
and
fiction
story. And I'm starting
story.
To get, after doing this program for over 8 years, I'm starting to get into that area. I didn't want to go there in the beginning, maybe for that reason, that it wasn't quite mainstream. It's a little off the wall.
It's pretty much as far out as you can go.
And then there's the other aspect of it, the other question that would come to mind. Okay, all right, I will accept that this is true. Mm-hmm. And what am I supposed to do with that? How does that change my life?
You know what I think? I think we as human beings, once we have woken up, we begin to ask the questions, who am I? Where did I come from? And why am I here? Yeah. Those are the three questions.
I'll throw a fourth one. And where are we going?
Where are we going? Yeah. What's the purpose of this whole thing?
Exactly.
And so having an understanding, a deeper understanding of where we really did come from outside of, say, the religious factions who have given us the Bible or, you know, Mohammed or Mormon are valid to help a society live nicely, you know, get along, play in the sandbox together.
Yeah.
However, there's a whole other story going on that has been squashed since the beginning of time, or I should say maybe the Catholic Church. Or, you know, and so that's a big thing that you go up against when you start to talk about this information. People are so into their beliefs.
Yeah.
Religiously.
Yeah.
And when that goes up against that, you have anger, you have
conflict.
Yeah. But yeah.
Now, I have to wonder, because I don't know enough about these civilizations, I have to wonder if the Mayans, the Incas, the Aztecs, just to name three, these ancient civilizations, if they had the same problem in terms of the doctrine and dogma. I mean, we certainly are familiar with what has been discovered as far as their rituals and ceremonies and the pyramids in Central and South America and so forth. But I wonder if they had the same issues in terms of the hierarchy, if you will, saying we can't reveal this information to, you know, the peasants because then they'll start thinking for themselves, we'll lose control.
Right.
And this is one of the interesting things in modern times. I have a gentleman I met who wrote a book called AD, AD, basically the government comes out and says, we're going to tell you the truth. We are not alone. We have the evidence here, da-da-da-da-da-da. And
they say they're going to come out.
Well,
they say the government is finally going to admit that aliens exist.
Yeah. Well, my first...
That's why Ancient Aliens is allowed to be aired, and they're sort of like easing us into that.
My first question, though, is to the general public, this would be my question to the government. Why should I believe you now? You've been lying to us for 50, 60, 70 years or more.
And will it be the whole truth or will it just be segments that help your agenda?
And then the excuse that is given for not having revealed it is, well, the American, the public can't handle
it.
It's like, who are you to decide what I can or cannot handle?
That's right. That's right. It's all for your benefit. It's always for our benefit.
If it fries my brain and I roll over within a stroke, that's my problem.
That's right.
Not yours.
But you have to understand, it's always for your benefit.
Yeah.
Always.
I find that fascinating.
Homeland Security is always for your benefit.
Yes. The NSA can...
NSA always...
By the way, if they are actually listening to radio programs or my phone conversations or whatever, I'm actually flattered that they would find my conversations that interesting that they would be listening.
Right.
You know, it's like, really? Or anybody else... When I was working for the religious radio station back in Phoenix for 15 years, I got to a point where, you know, you talk about the biblical passage, you shall know the truth and the truth will set you free. And I always was perplexed, not by the passage and my understanding of it, but by the lack of understanding on the part of the people who kept quoting it and yet kept hiding things.
Right.
And so I came to the conclusion that if God, the Creator, is all-knowing, omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient, God already knows everything about me. So what difference does it make if it's 7, 7.5, or 8 billion people know, and most of them don't care anyway?
Right.
And if they do, boy, you don't have a life.
No. Well, yeah. Well, we are off on a tangent of the powers that be seem to have the agenda just to keep the civilization busy.
So speaking of the powers that be, or the power that gives us being, all right?
Yeah, two very different things.
Two different things. Now, I'm going to throw...
And the powers that spliced our DNA.
Yeah.
There's kind of three situations.
Well, I would actually put them in the same category
exactly.
as the powers that
exactly.
be.
Exactly.
But nonetheless, it brings to mind, we've done several programs in 2015 on mythology, and in particular in science fiction. But I was surprised when my co-host, Will Lynn, brought to the table at the beginning of the program, this is what we're going to talk about. And it was about Star Trek. But it was more specifically about something I'd shared with him off mic, and I was fine with it, having to do with one of the main characters that I had discussed called the Borg. Now, when I look at that character, and I'll use that term, what I see is a representation, even though Roddenberry may not have intended it this way, of us in terms of a collective, but each individual has a different task. So you and I are about the process of trying to find our purpose in life, find out why we're here, that ultimate question. Mm-hmm. But we also follow our intuition, for example.
Hopefully.
Honoring your inner wisdom.
That is the whole message in the book.
All right.
We don't listen.
So where is that inner wisdom coming from? Is it coming from a centralized, the word is incorrect here, place, okay, but... Is it centralized?
Is it the collective consciousness, sort of the matrix theory that you're
suggesting, in a manner of speaking.
That we don't have an original thought, but they're thought for us?
In a manner of speaking. There's a book that I was given at the age of 21 called The Impersonal Life. I have it in the other room. I'll show it to you. Okay. And the whole aspect of the Borg and, again, our collectedness, whatever you're doing, whatever I'm doing, totally different. But somehow, in the grand scheme of things, the big picture, which we can't really see,
the relation to
the
whole,
it works and it all flows.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we're in that zone, okay, we're listening
when
to
we
the
listen,
still small voice
yes.
and follow. It's not enough to listen. I joke with people. I say, look, if you're going to meditate, and my belief is that meditation is more about listening for that still small voice and getting that guidance. If you're going to do that and not follow, then
that
why bother listening?
Right, and that takes courage.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And
Well, the moment you step into meditation, you've made a decision, I believe, to listen and to follow.
But I've also learned there are many different types of meditation. I have difficulty finding the time, or I shouldn't say that way. Setting aside the time to find a place to be still.
Yeah.
So somebody offered the suggestion because I love walking.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that I can
that
walk
clears
in 20
your
minutes
mind.
To
that
the
moves
ocean.
The energy. Yeah.
He says, do breathing meditation as you're walking. 3 steps in, 1 step out, 3 steps, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you focus on that as you're walking.
Well, you may not
know
this,
a meditation.
But even back in the day, the monks were unable to meditate, and that is the whole reason yoga was invented.
Yeah.
So that after an hour of these practices of conscious breathing, focusing on a drishti, that you were then able to sit.
Right.
Even the monks couldn't sit. So yoga actually got me into meditation. Are you kidding me? I could never sit and just meditate.
Mm.
Straight out of life, busy, 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 and then sitting down
Type
and
A
breathing.
Personality. Yeah.
No. So, no, if you do yoga, have you ever done yoga?
Very little.
All right. Well, if you'd like to, I'm a yoga instructor. I would love to teach you.
My legs.
All right. No, it's not about, don't think about it as flexibility.
Exactly.
It's more about breathing and focus. And then afterwards, I don't make meditation a big part of my day. Mm-hmm. 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
I want to be living my life, but it does actually help. Just there's something at the very end of yoga. It's called Shavasana, which means corpse in Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And you lie as still as you can for 5 minutes and you come out and you have retuned yourself to another place.
Yeah.
You're still, you're calm, you're focused, you're centered. It's and you have changed the brain hemisphere balance. It's a physiological thing as well.
Yeah, another gentleman I interviewed several times, and I used to interview him on Easter Sunday. I did it for like 4 years in a row. Swami Vidyadishananda of the Self-Inquiry Fellowship. And he shared in one of our interviews about, because I'm dovetailing off of your changing the brain mm-hmm. patterns.
Balancing the brain hemispheres.
He talked about the reason why, and specifically in England, they are teaching children how to read and write and even speak Sanskrit.
Because it's the ancient, language. And that language actually vibrates it means.
Right. So going back to what you
said,
the process of sort of rewriting the pathways, or they call them the synapses in the brain, as we associate with people such as yourself, as we get into different practices, whether they be yoga or Qigong or Tai Chi, mm-hmm. whatever the practices mm-hmm. are, read different books, listen to different types mm-hmm. of music, on and on and on, we begin to rewrite those pathways.
Yes.
And that theory that we only use 10% of our brains, mm-hmm. I found out is a misnomer because they, for whatever reason, couldn't really figure out what the rest of the brain was for, mm-hmm. I guess. When in reality, some of the people that I've talked with on this program say, no, it's not that we don't utilize it. It's that we don't, A, understand it, and we don't really understand the capacities. We're using our whole brain, but it's like a hard drive on a computer.
Maybe we need another DNA splice upgrade.
Maybe that's what's coming. But you have a 3 terabyte hard drive, but you've only used 500 megabytes.
Yeah.
Okay. And you have yet to access it. And I don't see that as an incapacity. It's, again, if we change the synapses, then we begin the process of accessing those different things.
And this takes dedication. And honestly, we were talking about the powers that be.
Yeah.
And the agenda and the program and the collective consciousness
mm-hmm.
and maybe the program that they are broadcasting
right.
is a very low vibration.
Yes.
And it keeps us down in the lower. And so I believe if they were broadcasting a much higher, it's sort of like that pendulum swinging,
mm-hmm.
then all the pendulums of the clock start swinging at that same thing.
Yeah.
They're broadcasting a very low vibration, and so it's keeping us down. Whereas if they were to do a big one, we would all sort of be uplifted and rise to that.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of dedication and time, and we just don't have time.
Yeah. I mean,
really?
We have
most people.
Well, we're only here for, maybe if we get lucky, 100 years, if that long.
Yeah.
And there are all kinds of things going on. I mean, my great-grandmother passed away just making it to 100. And in her early 90s, I was telling people that I was going to outlive her. And as she continued one year after the next, I would say, and she's making it really hard. So I still have another half a lifetime to go, so to speak. And I don't know what is going to happen, where I'm going to go, what I'm going to do, where I'll be. I know where I want to be. As I said, Ireland.
Ireland. Well, then.
That'll be a home base.
There you go.
But it's something that we're all trying to understand. And it seems as though there are some people, young people, who they connect right away, but the vast majority, they're stuck in that lower vibration
mm-hmm.
Of the things.
The masses.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's not until we reach into our 50s and or our 60s and so forth that we start to get it. And then we start looking back going, oh my gosh, did I really waste all that time back there?
Right. But was it a waste, or was it just building upon the experiences and the wisdom that can now take you here? Had you not had all in your 20s,
exactly,
your ridiculous 20s, maybe you wouldn't be here. You're like, you know what? That really isn't fulfilling.
Yeah.
But you're just getting out of your house and you're like, hey, this is a blast.
Exactly. I've never believed that there's ever been any wasted time, talking about different jobs. I mean, there are some jobs that I've had for short periods of time that, you know, you look at the moment and going, what does this have to do with? But you start moving forward and you realize, oh, okay, the whole thing may not have applied, but there was certain aspects
that's right.
That you can
Captain
apply.
Captain Hindsight, you know, it's so easy when you apply it.
So,
and there is no such thing as wasting time, really. There really isn't. Even if you're just sitting and you're pondering, there is no such thing as wasting time.
Now, to that end, most people probably have a book running around in their head or more. Some people,
yes,
and then some
we
people,
all have a story,
right? And then some people will actually write it down.
Yes.
Okay, some of them are autobiographical. Some of them are they're subjects that they're very interested in, and others are, you know, fiction. Yours in this case, which the title seems to indicate, oh, well, this is an autobiography of Athena. Actually, it's not. It's fiction based
it's fiction.
On truth,
right?
Fact, truth?
It's based on fact. I mean, writers always write about what they know.
Right.
You always write about, I mean, it's coming from my lens and my perspective and my feelings on things. But in a book you have, it's my book. I'm taking the time to write it. So it's fiction so I can indulge. So I could exaggerate or I could shift a few things to make it more exciting.
What was the impetus that said, it's time for you to put this down on paper?
Well, my husband and I have a very lovely, beautiful story, as I'm sure you and your wife do. But whenever we'd be sitting across the table from a couple and they'd say, how'd you guys meet? And we tell them the story and they're like, oh my God, you should write a book about that. Oh my God, you should write a book about that. So, you know, 14 years later, I was in Sweden reading a book, and it wasn't that good of a book. Reading a not so good book was the impetus. I thought, I could write a better book than this. So I literally put the book down, went up to my hotel room, and started writing my book. And I wrote all summer long, and I wrote two summers in a row.
Wow.
About my story.
Did you already have the discipline to sit down every day, or was it? It was so strong. The impetus was so strong.
I think the impetus was so strong. The time. I didn't. I couldn't believe. My husband couldn't believe that me, because I'm a very running around, very athletic all the time, moving person, that I could sit at that desk for 4 to 6 to 8 to 10, going into the wee hours of the night. And in Sweden, the sun never really sets.
Oh.
And so that tricks you. So it would be midnight and it would still be dusk. The sky was dusk.
Well, but remember,
and he'd be
too,
like, it's midnight. It's time to go to bed. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, but you get into that zone and time absolutely
does not exist.
Nothing. When I first started working with computers back in the mid-90s, and I would be doing the things that I would be doing on the computer, I couldn't believe that 2 and 3 and 4 hours had gone by.
Yes.
It feels like 20 minutes. I'm just going to be 5 minutes, dear.
Yes. That's what would happen. He's like, can we please eat? Can we please eat? I'm like, pulling myself away. Yes, we can eat. Yeah. Then I'd go back.
Yeah.
Yeah, very unlike me.
Very interesting.
And I've never written a book. I just did it.
Yeah.
I didn't believe I could even finish it. I thought, you know, because then I went home and then, you know, 8 months had passed and I didn't really write anything. And I was like, oh, that was just, well, maybe not.
Yeah.
And then boom, we get back to Sweden the next summer. Here we go again, you know. And so it really did take being away and out of the house.
Wow. Well, I give you a great deal of credit for that, because I am still working on mine since 2001.
You can do it.
I know.
You can do it.
But will I? That's the question.
You,
I need to finish it.
You know, you need to make that decision
because
there are so many times I thought, I can't believe I started this. This is way too big of an undertaking. I'm not going to finish it.
Well, I finally got through the internal arguments over, well, gee, everybody else is saying that already. I mean, they're already putting it in those words. They're saying what I would have said and I'm saying in my book. And I finally pushed that aside saying, doesn't matter.
Because you are saying it differently.
Exactly.
Because
exactly.
Eckhart Tolle, when he wrote The Power of Now, back in the day, everybody was telling him, everybody's talking about the present moment, being in the present moment.
Yeah.
But he was so guided and he had this inner thing coming out of him that he wrote it.
Yeah.
Don't listen to the other people. Goodness.
No,
and make
no.
the decision. Just make the decision. And you will finish it if you make that decision.
I have to say that, and I applaud my sister for doing this for me. She actually proofread what I had accomplished up to that point. And when I got it back, she had made some corrections.
Yeah.
That when I read it, I'm going, wait a minute. That's not the way I learned it in English class. Then I did some research on what she had changed, and I realized that both her way punctuating and mine are appropriate.
Depending on how you want to say
exactly.
It. You know, you got to throw away the rules of grammar. Yeah. In the beginning, it's so funny. I was so, you know, when you write in Word document, they have the little red line.
Yes.
When you make a mistake. And I was so anal about not making a mistake grammatically. And then I started writing is also, you have to be a reader.
Yes.
Read many other books as you're going along and you get ideas and ways of writing. And what I learned about my favorite writers is that they break all the rules.
Yeah.
Because you have a unique way of saying it.
Yeah.
Don't listen to those little red lines.
Yeah. I think, and I'm curious, would you spend time prior to sitting down and putting pen to paper or fingers to keys, would you spend time in, say, meditation or what have you, just waiting, or not so much waiting, but wanting to draw upon whatever the inspiration was so that when you did sit, you didn't have to deal with that whole concept called writer's block, that it would just flow out of you.
Yeah, sometimes it was different, and as it is for you probably. Sometimes I would wake up, bam, the inspiration was there. The whole chapter was written before. Mm-hmm. It was just written. I just had to get it out. And then other times I was stuck. You will get writer's block. I was blocked for, 6-8 months till the next summer. I had no idea what I was going to write, and I wasn't inspired. And then sometimes when I was stuck, I would go, I'm going for a walk. And you love to walk.
Yeah.
Set out for a walk with the intention, ask for what you should write. And, 15 minutes into the walk, it would start coming. And I would write the whole chapter in my head on my walk.
Yeah.
I would come home running, not even taking a shower, and I'm sweating. Just I live in Florida. And, running in there and getting it out how it came.
And so, you have to.
You have to. You have to just get it out immediately.
It's almost the same as having a dream and you wake up and you've got to write it down or you're not going to remember it.
Oh, yes. That's a really good technique.
Yeah. Don't tell anybody. Put it down.
Have you ever, whenever I have questions about life, big questions, I ask right before I go to bed, and then I wake up and the answer's there.
Yeah.
Magically. That really does work.
Yeah. We're talking with Athena, and we're talking about a lot of different things here. Athena Markopoulos and her book, Athena, A Modern Day Goddess, Love Story. We're going to continue talking with her here on the program. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and we encourage you to stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and we're here with Athena Markopoulos. And I want to thank you, of course, for taking time to share with us your story. This is the kind of conversation that certainly kind of goes all over the place, but it has that thread running through it that you'd have sitting down at the dining room table over maybe a glass of wine or a cup of coffee or something like this with a group of people. And my wife and I, we've had those kinds of conversations that you just don't want it to end. Whether you have divergent views on a particular subject or whether everybody agrees, there is something about that kind of a conversation that, like I said, time has no meaning. Unfortunately, at one point you realize it's really, really late and I've got to go and so on and so forth.
Right.
It's
rare to make those connections.
It is.
Yeah.
It really is.
And then you find them, hold on.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we moved from a place, Phoenix, where we had that, but things were moving and churning and so forth. And, well, here we are.
You listened and it was time to go.
Yeah. That was what was real interesting was when both she and I lost our jobs in 2006, and it's actually 2 days apart, even though I knew mine was coming because the station had been sold and they gave us 30 days and they said 28th of February that's it. And we're not going to keep anybody on. We're letting everybody go and we're hiring new people, blah, blah, blah. And then she quits her job the next day. And we're wondering what to do. And I remember I've had two experiences, that one included and then one since then, where I had no fear. Now, before that, anytime there was financial upheaval or job upheaval, man, you'd start, most people start shaking in their boots, right? No fear whatsoever. And she came to me and I've told this story on the program many times where she was very scared. She says, I feel like we're on the edge of a precipice. And I said, what do we do? She says, what do we do? And I just shared my experience has been with all the books I've read, the people I've interviewed, workshops and seminars I've been to, they say the same thing. You do two things when you're on the edge of a cliff. You jump and you trust.
Yes.
And the process began. And then the second time I had no fear was when I was sitting on the edge of a granite slab hanging out over the North Atlantic Ocean on an island off of Ireland in the it was called Inishmore.
On purpose.
Intentionally, because I wanted to get pictures from that angle. And of course, my wife is standing back there going, where did you put the insurance policy?
Exactly.
But the fear did not hit me until 8 to 10 hours later when I was lying snug, safe, and warm in my bed inside the stone cottage we were staying in. And then those images started rolling through my head. And that's when the fear hit. It was really weird.
Interesting.
But in the moment, in that moment, there was none. I wasn't worried about falling over the edge or anything like that. That is probably the biggest block that we have, the fear. And it's been made into an acronym, false evidence appearing real, and so on and so forth. And yet, kind of going back to what you said earlier about the passages in our lives that we go through, that if we hadn't gone through them, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Right.
It's the same thing.
They force you to jump.
Fear is part of who and what we are. It's whether we choose, because it is a choice, to get stuck in it.
It separates the men from the boys.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a person who, when fear comes, like losing your job, quite spooky, do you jump with the faith that you're going to make it, or do you cower and, you know, go into the welfare line and, you know, stay in your little thing in fear? It's the difference. And that's actually what the book talks about, too. She's in extreme fear, but she actually takes that leap. And what comes from taking that leap is so fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
And when you keep taking those leaps, it will, you know, it usually works out.
Have you ever been, shall we say, so connected to another individual, and yet also as connected to your purpose and what you need to be doing with your life, that you're concerned that if you continue to pursue your purpose, which, you know, you should do anyway, you might have to let go of that connection?
Fortunately, all of my past relationships up until my boyfriend, I just left. My purpose was stronger, and it was like, I just left. So the connection with them was far less than the connection to my purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I met my husband, he has the same purpose. Now, so I have not come to that point where, because we are super connected after 14 years.
Right.
If my purpose was stronger than my connection to him, well, it's whichever's stronger.
Yeah.
Whichever's stronger.
But at the same time, you have to... you have to take the position that, again, whichever is stronger, you have to be true to yourself.
Yes, I believe you do.
If that connection is stronger than your purpose, and I would assume that it could shift from one period in your life to another, that maybe that is, that connection is part of your purpose now.
That's right.
Now, tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, it might not be.
Yes. It depends on the relationship, and it depends on the purpose and the person that you're involved with. And hopefully, if they can see that your purpose is so strong that now it makes them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But they love you so much, and they're a big enough person.
Right.
That they say, they take the leap.
Right.
For you. They say, this makes me very uncomfortable, but I know you need to do this.
Right.
And then they do the selfless act of allowing you to do it.
Right.
So you can keep the relationship. You know, it can... It's 50-50. It can go either way. But no, I've never had to make that choice. I hope I never do.
Well, and I'd have to say that in a manner of speaking, not to be self-aggrandizing by any means, but that I sort of did that with my first wife, that she wanted to live a certain way that was not part of, at that time, was not part of my plan for us. And I said, I'm out of here. I can't stay.
I did that with my first fiance, and my husband did it with his first fiance.
Yeah. His
purpose was bigger.
Yeah.
And so then he and I connected, and then our purpose was the same.
Yeah. Which is great when you have something like along those lines. So.
Moving on is a big one. Knowing when it's over.
Yeah.
And when to let go.
So to that end, what is your purpose?
What is my purpose? You know, I'm not actually sure. I couldn't say my purpose is this, my purpose is that. I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I am a unique being and I have something to offer. I think every day if I can just be in my truth,
mm-hmm.
connect with people, even if they're strangers, even like just living your life. I see some people that are so nice maybe at the party, but then they go to the grocery store or they're nasty to the waitress. Mm. It's like just share the love that you are yeah. in every situation. I don't know my unique purpose. Do you know yours? I don't know.
I think that there's a part of me that finds it difficult to verbalize. I know what it is, but to speak it, it's like, I don't know if I can.
No, I know. Well, it's like,
you know,
okay, we all want like, to, we're all, well, you and I are seekers.
Right.
And people who are listening to this show are clearly
mm-hmm.
seeking.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if we can continue to seek, and then Gandhi said, be the change that
yeah.
you want to see in the world.
Yeah.
So be that and be a representation of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think just emanating that, just being that vibration, whatever that is, that of your highest, what you can be.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
I guess if I was going to, it would just to be of service. In whatever capacity
right.
I can, if I have the abilities to be of
That's
service.
That's of the highest order. Yeah.
When we talk a lot on this program about searching for those new ways of living. The new paradigms for a new world, if you will. And I came up with this analogy that there is a lifeboat, and there is enough room on this lifeboat for every single person. But there's a caveat. You have to be willing to let go of the old ways. They don't work, and we're not taking them with us. If we can help it, we're not taking them with us.
Right.
And that's the only caveat. If you want to stay and continue working in those old ways, then more power to you.
Right.
But no, I'm not interested in
right.
that anymore.
No. And then it all comes back to awareness.
Yeah.
Those who are aware enough to even know that there are harmful belief systems that we need to let go.
Yeah. One of the interesting things about belief systems, and I remember this just pops into my mind, is my conversation with Greg Braden on his book, The Spontaneous Healing of Belief. And he talked about the transition from belief to knowing,
mm-hmm.
that's where we're headed.
It's a vertical experience.
Yeah, and that's where we're headed. I mean,
yes.
That's where we want to be going. That
yeah.
it's not going to be a question of, this is what I believe.
Right.
I
How
know
many books have I read?
Yeah.
Right.
I know that I know that I know.
Yes, because I have experienced that. And, you know, yeah. that experience can only come after a certain number of years on the planet.
Yeah.
From the knowing aspect.
Although there are, as I said earlier, there are young people who they've come in sort of old souls.
Yeah.
Who are bringing that experience
yes,
with
yes.
them.
The next
hopefully
level.
To teach the other folks in their
yeah.
peer group, hey, it is possible.
Yeah.
There is more
yes.
than what we have. And, you know, I know that you feel this way too, that we want this kind of a change for everybody, not just a select group, no matter how large that group
mm-hmm.
is, and not the majority, but everybody.
Yeah.
Why is that such a hard concept for people to grasp?
It may be a DNA receptor issue. Some people may just not have the DNA to receive certain information.
We need to
transform if you understand resonance and yeah. vibration, once you're above a certain vibration, you can receive these vibrations. It's like plinging the guitar.
Yeah.
You know, or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so until you get to a certain vibration, you can't receive those vibrations.
Yeah.
And so some people's awakening is a slow thing, and some people's awakening is a aha, boom. You're
major
awakened.
Epiphany. Yeah.
Yeah, major epiphany. So
yeah. I have to say, my conversation with my brother back when I was in my early 30s, we were at a family reunion, and he and I were walking out in the desert, which was away from the main building, and we were talking. I mean, it was a pretty neat talk. I mean, I was really kind of surprised. I look back now, and we haven't had those kinds of conversations in a long time, but I was sharing with him, you know, where I was coming from and so forth, kind of like what we're doing here, And he says, well, it's about time you got it. My God, you're in your 30s, what have you. And it dawned on me, and I said this to him. I says, you know, it's not about when you get it,
no.
but that you get it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of stuck with me, that give yourself permission to learn it, to grow into it
yeah.
if you haven't, or to maybe do some research so that maybe if it doesn't resonate with you today, if you continue working on it, it might.
Yeah.
It may never, but don't worry about getting it today. There's, I mean, even though
we may never get it. I don't, you know, I mean, to become enlightened, to become that Jesus Christ consciousness.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll be this lifetime. I don't, you know.
One of my guests about 6 years ago actually said that we already are.
We already are
ascended beings. And I'm going,
we actually are.
What are we talking about?
We just don't realize it. But
right,
I mean,
exactly.
Until I can part the waters or create fish from, you know, we really are.
Yeah.
But we don't believe it. That's the belief system that needs to be shifted.
Yeah.
But yet the program goes 100% against that. Us finding our power.
It's like with Jesus and all of the things that he is alleged to have done, all of the quote-unquote miracles. My perspective is that for him—
They weren't miracles.
They weren't miracles. It's just what he did. It was who he was.
Yes. And his whole message was, you too can do what I'm doing.
But then he added— But greater works than these will you do.
Right.
And of course, everybody speculates as to what those are.
Yeah.
I mean, what is greater than, supposedly, him raising Lazarus from the dead? What's
right.
greater than that? Maybe
right.
raising oneself from the dead.
Right.
To me, it's really extraordinary. When you start looking back, and again, we can only, it's one of the reasons why with language, I find it somewhat frustrating that I don't speak and or read Aramaic or Hebrew so that I can actually read the original languages
right.
and get
to
that
know
context,
the, yes.
the real in-depth meaning, but that's when we go inside. We take that and we say,
all
go inside
of it's
with
inside.
It.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have to speak that language to understand that.
You talked about vibration, and we've talked on this program a lot about sound,
mm-hmm.
music and tones and these kinds of things. Is that something that you have investigated?
I can't really speak on that. I've read a little, and mm-hmm. apparently sound is the most effective healing method from what I've heard. But have mm-hmm. you heard of the solfeggio frequencies?
I've not heard of it in that context. But there's a
the 528 hertz.
Oh no, that's something different. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, all of the frequencies of music have been shifted up into a different category. Whereas it used to be back in 528, and back in the ancient times, they used to use the 528 frequency to heal. Now that's all been shifted, unbeknownst to us.
That's very interesting. 528.
Mm-hmm. It's the vibration of the heart and love.
There's an interview I'll be doing in not too long from now, dealing with sound and vibration and so forth. I may ask.
There's
him
a station
if he's
dedicated to this, and like for example, my husband is a musician and a composer, and he could have all of his songs transposed to the 528. You can transpose them back down into the solfeggio frequencies.
Interesting.
Yes,
I'll have to research that.
Far more effective.
Another element is what's called the Mozart effect. And I did some research on that. I mean, and of course, it's gone both ways, pro and con.
Do you have children?
I have animals, but no children, although they are our children. But I found it interesting, and my first question is, why Mozart? Why not Beethoven or Brahms?
Good question.
Or one of these other? What was it about Beethoven about Mozart that they decided to try to do this research project to determine how it affects your brain patterns and your brain waves and how it your brain develops, kind of like Sanskrit, learning Sanskrit, type of thing.
Living with a musician, he says to me, and I don't understand this because I don't have this going on inside of my head, but mm-hmm. he said, I constantly have music in my head.
Him
constantly.
Too, huh? Yeah, me too.
You do?
Yeah.
Are you a musician? Can you get
no.
it down? So he said the hardest part is translating what I'm hearing. So thankfully he plays guitar and piano by ear and he can get it down. But so maybe Mozart's music was coming from a very, very, very high dimension.
Maybe that,
I don't know.
I mean, because
I wish I knew.
When the final analysis, it's still just notes on a page. But where did those notes come from?
Where did they? They came
the
from
sequence,
another place.
And the measures and the beats and all of those different things. Yeah.
It does change your brain chemistry.
Yeah. No, and I have to say he's very fortunate that he has the ability not only to do that, but to be a musician.
Yes, he honed it in high school. But I will say, on a very physical note, because we're body, mind, and spirit, all of that, you have to honor all of them. Have you heard of a product called Ethereum Gold?
No.
Look into it. I play piano, but I play classical piano. I read. And the Mozart, the Beethoven, the Chopin, all of that. And Ethereum Gold actually balances the brain hemispheres. And can I tell you, when you take this stuff, you are sharp as a tack. You can feel the difference. It's, you know, they say the monks when they meditate.
Mm-hmm.
Then they show the science under the MRI that their brain hemispheres are balanced.
Oh, wow.
That's what Ethereum Gold does.
Wow.
So that's a very physical thing that you can do first thing in the morning. Spray it under your tongue or take a couple of them.
Yeah, I know that there are so many different...
Cheating.
Yeah, well, in a manner of speaking, but, you know...
we need help.
Yeah, we do. We need all the help we can.
Some of us more than others.
Let's hope the other worlders are out there to help us, because I know that... And I remember talking with one of my guests a few years back, and they were saying that this whole abduction thing that had been going on for decades has basically, it's come to a stop, that it's not, that process isn't happening.
Why? They've given up?
No, that I think that supposedly, again, I'm just repeating this, supposedly there's been some agreement made that enough is enough. Okay.
In one way, I guess it's good.
Yeah,
because
leave them alone.
We don't want people to suffer. Leave them alone.
Leave them alone.
Or is it for our highest good? We don't know.
Yeah. Who's to say? I have to say that I was dealing with some physical conditions for several months, and I actually went to my doctor, and he was baffled as well. And I said, "Well, I have to say, I know this is way out and way off the beaten track, but the only other conclusion I can come to is that this is a side effect of the alien abductions and probings and so forth that I've been getting." And he says, "Well," he laughed. But then he says, "You know, I'm not going to discount it."
Have you?
No, I have not.
Oh.
I'm not saying that I don't know. I don't know if I've been abducted. I don't know if I've been tested and poked.
Yeah,
and
apparently you
and,
remember. You remember the whole thing.
Supposedly, but I have no recollection at present. All I know is that I have this condition where these symptoms move around in my body until they go away. And my process right now, as far as health and wellness is concerned, is was suggested to me by a good friend of mine. He says, you need to change your chemistry. And that's a hard thing to do.
Your pH?
He didn't specify. Huh. He just said, you need to change your chemistry. See, I used to be a big soda drinker. And as we speak, I am coming to the end of 11 straight weeks. Can I say of sobriety? That sounds so weird. But
you're a cokeaholic.
In a manner of speaking, yes. And so it's the sugars.
That is nasty.
But the
and
soda,
the corn
helps
syrups,
with salt,
and
all of those things. And so I'm
probably worse for you than alcohol.
Working to change the chemistry.
Yes.
Trying to eat as much organic. Although I have a hard time with all of that because science,
because
as you
the
mentioned,
chemtrails.
No, not so much that, but it's more. Science has proven that everything is just energy, right?
That's what I was going to say. Yes.
Well, if everything is just energy, then what difference does it make?
Well, because
what you
the
ingest?
Vibration of the pesticides
but
is not a good one.
Okay.
No, it's not a good one. Yeah. My husband's a nuclear chemist. And
oh,
boy,
wow.
Has he given me a lesson on chemistry and some of what the man-made chemicals are made of and these molecules and how our bodies don't know how to deal with them.
Yeah.
And they
the
don't know how to spit them out.
Yeah.
Oh,
The vibration
yeah,
is so different.
And I'm going to mention something that I can't talk about. But yesterday we had this conversation about chirality. Do you know what chirality is?
I've heard the term.
It's the spin of the molecule, whether it be in food or people. We have a chirality. And if we put things in with the chirality that is not resonant with us, it's harmful to us. So genetically modified foods, man-made, they haven't thought it through and they're not paying attention. They've chosen to ignore.
Yeah.
Because it's all about the money. It's not about promoting the health. It depends on what your objective is.
Well, I put the question out there every time I hear about some of these new fangled things, if you will. And
stop the
madness. Question that I pose is, just because we can, does that mean we should?
This is listening to your inner wisdom.
You know?
Just ask yourself,
yeah.
You know, what feels right.
Yeah. There's a process called kinesiology.
Mm-hmm.
And it was taught to me many years ago. And the process that I was taught was very simple with your thumb and your forefinger, and you loop your other hand, thumb and forefinger, so now you have sort of a linked chain. And you you basically start out to test it. You say yes, and it holds.
Right.
And you say no, and it breaks. Then you pose whatever question that you want, okay? And primarily it's to deal with you, not
yes,
with other people, with
that's
you.
That's right.
Because it's your body that's sort of talking
right,
with
right, the fundamental press, the foundation of that is that your body has a wisdom.
Yeah. So let's
say without
you go to the
getting your
store.
Brain involved,
yeah.
So then your filter's like, oh, I don't want to spend more on organic, you know. Test yourself. And that's the thing. I owned a health and wellness magazine, and nutrition is such a tricky one. Because one man's nutrition is another man's poison.
Exactly. Because the vibrations of each human body are different.
We're absolutely unique.
And
so across the board, you know, B12 might be good for you. Not necessarily for me, or not in that form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, all you have to do to prove that is go into a crowd and move around and be aware of the feelings that you get when you move through the crowd and you come in contact with or in proximity to other people, different people. I had this very unusual experience just the other day. I was walking. And there was a gentleman who was in front of me. He was walking and he was carrying a book and he had shoulder length, curly salt and pepper hair. And it reminded me of one of my favorite Irish actors whose name escapes me. In any event, I thought, interesting looking fella, well, you know. And anyway, so he looked back over his shoulder at me a couple of times. But he continued walking. And then he stopped and pulled off to the side, facing out towards the street as I walked by, and watched me walk by. And I sort of looked at him as I walked by. And then he followed me for about 30 or 40 feet. And then he started talking to me.
So you knew something was there. Something was there.
And he says, what? And this was very unusual. What do they call you?
That to you?
He said that to me. And
is
I
he
said,
from another
I said,
planet?
What do you mean? What do they call me? My name is, and he gave me his name.
Was he like from another time zone?
It's possible.
Time traveler.
And I noticed he was carrying a library book. I recognized because of the covering and the labeling. And I said, I see you have a book there. What's it about? And he showed me. He just flipped it up, and he showed me I can't remember what the title was. And I says, well, what's it about? He says, it's about King Arthur's court. And I said, oh, I like the Holy Grail, like we're all searching for. And yes, but actually this goes, it takes place way before that, you know, and so forth. And we didn't chat about much of anything after that other than, you know, I mentioned that I worked at a radio station and so forth and so on. And then we parted and went on our way. Most of the time when I'm walking, that does not happen. And this was off on a side street instead of the main street that we have here, State Street, here in Santa Barbara. And I thought, wow. And there was one of those opportunities, one of those experiences where, I mean, I really wasn't thinking of anything in particular, but I remember hearing what's called, I think it was called a process called sidewalk tarot. Where you focus on a particular thought. You have a question in mind, let's say, all right?
And then the answer.
And the answer comes to you, and it may come to you, maybe a car passing with a song playing.
It might be the TV.
Could be the TV playing, a television program or a commercial.
Yeah.
Could be somebody in a conversation saying
something.
You
always get the answer.
Yeah.
Through the different channels.
And that's what I think it was called Sidewalk Tarot.
So what did you get from it?
I'm still processing it, honestly. I guess because it was so comfortable.
Yeah.
And it was.
You're both intrigued.
Yeah. Now, whether I run into this gentleman again, it's entirely possible because he's got a library book from the library that's a block away. So I'm thinking he must live in the neighborhood. But then again, you just don't know.
Yeah. Or did he just show up? Who knows?
It's fascinating to open oneself up to those kinds of experiences because you just don't know what's going
to
happen.
Yeah. Being open. To that. All of my best friends I've met that way in the most inopportune Well, you know, my best friend of 25 years, we were dancing at a nightclub, an all-night nightclub, you mm-hmm. know. Woohoo! And we just looked over at each other.
Yeah.
I'm not gay. I'm nothing. We just
right.
made that connection,
connection
in our
yeah.
eyes.
Yeah.
And I think I picked up a flower and I gave it to her and she put it behind her ear and we danced the whole night and we've been friends for 25 years.
Yeah.
And that's happened with all of my friends, whether I meet them at the grocery store and I'm like, I need to know that person. And then we connect and they feel
yeah.
really good and I want to be around them.
Exactly.
That's the biggest thing, feeling.
Erases.
How does it feel to be around certain people?
Yeah.
Surround yourself with the ones that feel good.
Well, and that raises two things. Number one is that we have the freedom of association and disassociation.
That's right.
We don't have to explain it to anybody. But we have that freedom. I don't want to be around this person, so I'm moving
away.
That's
right, except for when it's family. Then you got to put up with some stuff.
No, you don't think so?
I
would even say, look, if you are following your purpose and your true self, sometimes,
interesting.
You know, I'm not saying you create enemies. I'm just saying you don't have to be around them
right.
if you don't choose to.
Right, right.
Then the other thing is...
Why do you think I moved to Florida?
Well, then my best friend, who I met in sixth grade, and we went through grade school, high school, and college together. And the ups and downs of life, of me going through my first marriage and divorce, and his going through losing his parents and losing his house and losing his job and being on the street and homeless and all this kind of stuff. He's now turned things around. And I still remember the day that he came out. And we'd been friends
wow.
for so long. And my first reaction to him, almost verbatim, was, what do you want me to do with that? You're my best friend. What difference does that make to me?
Right.
Although
it was not for you. It was for him.
Yeah.
Not
yeah,
having to hold that
exactly.
secret.
And I said, it's okay. Nothing's changed. From
yeah,
my perspective,
right.
nothing's changed.
Right.
And, you know, we haven't stayed in as close a contact as I would have liked. But then, of course, we moved and he stayed there in Phoenix. But I find it fascinating how people will stay in situations, whether it be work
right.
or relationship, you know, close relationship or what have you.
It's fear.
Yeah.
Fear of the unknown. And it has to, for some people, it has to get so bad before they make a change.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. Again, it all goes back to awareness. And if you listen, you don't have to be hit over the head with a hammer to leave a situation. You can gently be nudged.
Yeah.
You can feel the nudging. Feel the whisper.
Yeah. You know, when we moved from Phoenix, it dawned on me that we didn't have to wait for our jobs to disappear.
Right. You could have. Right.
But then someone made the comment, yes, that's true. And at the same time, there's also a universal timing.
Yes.
So
spirit
it's like,
has a way. Yeah, spirit has a way.
Yeah.
Either you hear the whisper and the nudge, or you lose your jobs. And then it's like a kick in the butt out the door.
I want to thank you so much for spending time with us here on the program. I have three more questions to ask you before we wrap up. Just
okay.
want to let our listeners know the book is entitled Athena, A Modern Day Goddess Love Story. And she goes by the pen name of Lily Rose, but it's Athena Markopoulos. First question. Who is Athena Markopoulos?
Who is Athena Markopoulos? A woman who is trying her best to be the best that she can be. Whatever presents itself to her in that moment, do the best and be honest to everybody, including myself. I'm not one thing. Like I said, I think I'll probably do 10 more things. Now that I've hit on the writing thing, I love that, and I already am writing a second.
Wonderful.
So we could say right now Athena's a writer. A writer. I'm putting on that hat for now. We'll see how long it lasts.
Okay. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I would like to share my experiences in hope to help others who might have similar experiences. I mean, let's face it, we're all human. There's only so many themes that are happening. And some people, this book is a little embarrassing, and I put myself out there. And mm-hmm. I'm hoping to take away shame that many women might feel around certain situations and make certain activities an open conversation. Take away shame, take away guilt, take away thinking I'm a bad person. Because we're all the same, and mm-hmm. we're just trying our best.
Yeah.
And to help people, just sort of empower women to be of service, to tell my story and say, you know what, you're not alone. We've all done this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nothing to be shameful of.
And who inspires you?
My mother inspires me, and my husband inspires me. And you inspire me. I think it's wonderful that you have this show and you're following your truth and you're helping others to find better ways to live their life that they may not have known before. I think it's wonderful.
Well, thank you. And how can people get in touch with you or get a hold of the book? What's the best way to do that, website?
Yeah, it's not up yet. We're going to self-publish on Amazon. It'll be up December 1st.
Okay.
However, now if they want to contact me, they can go to my magazine website, which is selectmag.net.
Selectmag.net. Okay.
And they can contact me through
Great.
That.
Well, Athena Markopoulos, I want to thank you again for joining us on the program. It's been a pleasure having you in studio. I always love the in-studio interviews. The energy is so much better.
It's been so much fun. Thank you.
And hopefully we'll touch base again when your second book comes out, and we'll chat some more.
Excellent. I look forward to it.
Great. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.